My name is Heather Modis, and I am here to present our first year results of a multi-institutional NEPA coordinated agricultural project. So we have researchers from the USDA ARS, which is where I'm from. We have researchers from North Dakota State University, the University of Minnesota, and also Iowa State. And so the goal of our project is to intensify corn and soybean production by integrating what we are terming cash cover crops. So if we think about our region, Minnesota, North Dakota, and Iowa, it's a pretty productive region termed Northern Corn Belt, so you can guess we grow a lot of corn and soybeans. About 70% of the land within these three states is in agricultural production. And we know that there are unintended consequences to agricultural production. Within this region, it's characterized by short growing seasons and long winters. If you really want to know what cold is, come to Fargo in January. So that really limits us. If we look at satellite imagery of the area from a regional scale, what we can see is a lot of areas, where's the mouse? This brown area are our areas of our annual row cropping system. And during this time of year, we don't have a lot of green growth and cover on the soil. You can begin to see we have other areas where it's green. I don't know if I would necessarily call it perennial vegetation, but perhaps we're starting to see some of those row crops growing at that point. Even when we get into mid-May, we still have large areas of bare soil. It isn't until we get around this mid to late June that these areas of bare soil begin to be covered by our annual row crops. So this poses quite the problem. Again, we've got that short growing season. By the time October rolls around, we start harvesting and those areas begin to open back up. So what does that lead to? Well, we have those unintended consequences of environmental degradation, including both wind and water erosion, potential reduction in soil organic matter, additional nitrate leaching, but it also represents areas of missed opportunities. Although we have long, cold growing seasons, is there a way that we can capture additional solar energy or have a leaving root in the system to keep that soil covered? But we're also in a region where corn and soybean are king. So if we really want to enact positive changes and benefits on the landscape, it has to be in the framework of these corn and soybean rotations. Because we're not going to tell producers, hey, why don't you go ahead and grow some wheat? Because, you know, the market value might not be there, environmental conditions. We need to work within this corn-soybean rotation. So what are potential ways to do this? Now, we know when we have that monocrop in the winter or in the fall, winter, and spring, we have those areas where we don't have any ground cover, missed opportunities, potential nitrate leaching. Well, what if we started to look at dual cropping or growing two crops? Now, this could be done through adoption of cover crops, either planted after your main crop, either in the fall or in the spring. But what we're looking at is kind of two different ways. The goal would be to be double cropping, which is kind of unheard of in this region. You think about double cropping, and it's, you know, more south where they don't have such mild winters. Double cropping, yeah, it'd be really great, but again, it's tough. So what about relay cropping? So that's the simultaneous growing of two crops at once. And so we're thinking about how to do this with winter annual cover crops. So we have two new crops that we're pretty interested in. The first is winter camelina. This crop has high omega-3 heart-healthy oils. It is good for human consumption, and the oil can also be directly converted to jet fuel. It is grown, or was primarily grown prior to World War I and World War II in Europe. It's native to Europe and Eurasia. We're also interested in pennycress. Now, when I say this regionally, farmers look at me like I'm crazy because it's a weed. Pennycress is a weed, but it is also a good source of oil that can be converted directly into biofuels. Now, pennycress we can't eat because it's high in glucosinolates. So if you were to eat it, you'd have organ failure. So we're not going to touch it for edible purposes. Now, both of these crops, in addition to providing oil seed, their residues can help suppress weeds. And those glucosinolates have also been shown to be potential for biofumigation. So we're really interested in the additional environmental benefits that these two oilseeds provide. And we're also looking at cereal rye as kind of our check crop, because we know that this works to be grown as a winter annual cover crop in the northern corn belt. So what are our objectives? We wanted to determine what the optimum time for establishing these winter oil seeds are into standing corn and soybeans. Because we know if we wait until the end of corn or soybean harvest that we just don't have enough time for these crops to grow. So let's think about interseeding them. And then finally, we want to know what are the effects of relaying soybeans into these crops in the springtime. Can we get decent relay crop yields? So we were looking at planting at the last three reproductive stages of both the corn and the soybeans. So planting at corn R4, R5, and R6, and then soybean R6, R7, and R8. So to give you an overview of how this is done, we have four sites, one located just north of Fargo, one in Morris, where I'm from, one in Waseca, Minnesota, and then also in Ames, Iowa. Now, our Waseca site, we had some issues. We had too much rain, so we couldn't get it planted, which is something that we're going to have to, you know, deal with these more extreme weather events. And what we did get planted was hailed out in the spring. So really, we only have three site years presented so far. So in April or May of 2016, we planted our corn and soybeans on 30-inch rows. We used varieties and planting methods and everything that are more common to the site that it was planted at. So they're more locally adapted solutions. In August and September, so when we reached those three different reproductive stages of the corn and soybeans, we went in and we interseeded the cover crops. Now in two of the sites, we used a high boy planter. So it broadcasts by dropping the seeds down, and we have chains behind it for light incorporation. At the other two sites, it was hand broadcast and then lightly raked in to get some pretty decent seed-to-soil contact. So in October, we went ahead and we harvested the corn and soybeans right over top of the establishing cover crops. And they will overwinter, and this is what they look like. Rye looks like rye, but the pennycress and the camelina will overwinter in a rosette stage. So the plants are, you know, about this big, and they're not very tall. And they need to be vernalized, so they will not bolt or flower until we get that cold period. Once they begin to grow again in the spring, at about the time they start to bolt and flower is when we went ahead and we relayed the soybeans into the camelina and pennycress. About a week before we planted the soybeans, we sprayed out the ryegrass with glyphosate, so we terminated it. Any pennycress and camelina that was run over by the tractor tires, within 24 to 48 hours, it popped back up. So we don't assume that we had any damage to the plants from seeding the soybeans. In June and July, we harvested the pennycress and camelina, respectively. But to do this, we just raised the header on the combine and went right over top the soybeans. And then in October, we harvested the soybeans. And so the results for the soybean yields, I'm only going to present the Morris site because that's the only data that we have so far. So what happens? Well, our first year cash crop yields. The next couple of slides, the graphs are all going to be laid out the same. We're going to have the previous crop of corn on the left side and the previous crop of soybeans on the right side, and we have the three different planting dates. So again, that corresponds to the corn R4, 5, and 6 and the soybean R6, 7, and 8. And so if we look at total grain yield, the only significant difference we see is between the corn and the soybeans. That makes sense. We know corn is going to yield more than soybeans, but we don't have any reductions from interseeding these cover crops at any time point in these three reproductive stages. And we've seen that through other presentations today and yesterday as well. So that's good news that we can establish these cover crops without impacting corn or soybean yields. Now, if we look at the establishment of these crops in the fall, biomass alone, there's obvious differences when we interseed into corn versus when we interseed into soybeans. We get better biomass and green cover when we seed into the soybeans. But if you think about it, that makes sense. As soybeans mature, they drop their leaves, thereby opening up that canopy for better light interception. Whereas corn, the leaves just kind of droop, but they still maintain themselves on the plant, so there's still not that great of light interception. Our rye did the best. Again, that's because rye's a grass and it grows like a grass. Whereas our pennycress and our camelina, it's going to overwinter in that rosette stage, so we expect it to be much smaller. And in terms of green cover-wise, has anybody ever used the Canopio app? A couple of people? It's totally awesome. All you do is take a picture, and it analyzes it and tells you your percent green cover. So we know that between the rye and the winter oil seeds, we get about 2 times the green coverage with the rye than the oil seeds. But when we move into the springtime, those differences that we saw between the cover crop biomass and green cover between seeding into soybean versus seeding into corn is gone, which is really kind of exciting because we thought, oh man, this corn, it's got a lot of residue. We're going to have some issues. Come springtime, we don't see those effects. Again, we still have the effect of different cover crops having different biomass and green cover. Again, at this point, the rye is about 4 times greater in biomass and green cover than our winter oil seeds. But other than the green cover for planting date, there's not a lot of effects on things. Our planting date, it looks to be the second planting date in both corn and soybeans, give us the best green cover come springtime. Now, if we look at the oil seed yield, so again, we're harvesting over top of the soybeans, what we have is differences in our cover crops. So we have greater oil yield coming from the camelina than the pennycress. And we've seen this through multiple different studies. Camelina tends to be about 40% oil. In our study, we're much lower than 40% oil. We think that's because in previous studies, it's been direct drilled without interseeding it into another standing crop. So we're starting to think that this competition and interseeding is not only affecting our yields, but our oil seed content as well, because a good year would be about 1,200 pounds per acre, and we're producing 200 pounds of camelina and about 400 pounds of pennycress. Now, if we look at the whole system, so again, these soybean yields are only from Morris. What we do have is the rotational effect. So when we have soybean on soybean, our yields are lower than soybean on corn. So the system, if we were to keep doing soybean, cover crop soybean, we're not going to have as great yields. That makes sense. Nothing overly interesting there. But there are some differences with the cover crops. The black bar is the control. So where we terminated our rye cover crop, we had the second best yields. And where we have the oil seeds, we have reduced yields. But there was not any difference between the pennycress and the camelina. Now, if we look at the total grain yield of the entire system, so adding our soybeans and our oil seed crops together, we still have a reduction in total grain yield. But when we look at it solely, so just the soybeans alone, we have between 300 to 900 kilograms per hectare reduction. When you add on that pennycress and camelina, we're looking at only about 300 to 400 kilograms per hectare reduction. Still not that great, but it means we have work to do. In terms of some of our conclusions, we are seeing this lower oil yield when we do this intercropping. So that's something that we're going to have to consider. Is it due to moisture? Is it just due to plain old competition? What is it? But this study has shown that it's feasible to establish these winter annual cover crops into soybeans. Not only are we providing winter cover, but one of the great things about these oil seeds is they're the first things to flower in the springtime. So as our honeybees begin to come back to the region from California, and also our native bees come out of hibernation, we're able to provide them nectar and pollen. 1 acre of these oil seeds can provide enough nectar to support one honeybee colony for an entire year. And we're also able to reduce nitrate leaching just by having these crops growing in the springtime. So although it may not be economically feasible, agronomically, we're still getting these benefits. Again, we're repeating the study for another year, so we hope to have some more conclusive results. And then also Russ in the back, we've got a poster, poster number 510, put in a little plug for it, where we're looking at different maturity groups of the soybeans and planting dates. And what we found is a longer maturing soybean variety planted at a later than normal date. Again, these are relayed into these standing cover crops. We can get similar yields to a non-relay cropped normal for the area maturing soybean. So we've got some tweaking and things that we can do, and I am out of time. So no time for questions?
No time for questions.
No time for questions. I know Sharon's next, so I'll be around if anyone has questions afterwards. So
thank you.